activists, culture workers, newsmakers, and freedom fighters, the weekly State Terror Roundup, resistance in residence with artists using their gifts to change the world, and letters from the inside. That's just a small taste of what this show is about as we seek to expose, agitate, and build. Tune in Monday through Thursday at 8 a.m. on 90.7 or at kpfk.org.
This is Sean Lee, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org.
Yeah, we have not achieved single payer or Medicare for all or whatever you want to call it, but we've made some gains. And I think what's most important is that we are building a social movement. We're not going to get this done through backroom negotiations, cigar smoke and politics and lobbyists, right? We really believe that we need to build a social movement. And so that's what we've been doing since 2004. We also, you know, of course, advocate on issues.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, a union town.
Good morning, and welcome back to the working week. That's right, the Thanksgiving holiday is officially over. I'm Enrique Sanchez, founder and director of Spanish Unite.
And I'm your co-host, Kay Michael.
And in this week's morning show, Steve Zelser brings us to a working week panel discussion, which included Teamster International Vice President at Large, John Palmer. Working Voices Executive Producer, Demra Corey, speaks with the Executive Director of Healthcare Now, Gillian Mason. And we have the latest labor news with all this week's Working Voices updates. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
The story of Thanksgiving is one of murder, enslavement, rape, and massacre of our Native peoples. Thanksgiving is a time that we know our children are going to bring home assignments that are talking about pilgrims and Indians and Squanto and how lovely those relationships were. Holidays have very different meanings for different people across tribes, across families, and it's important to acknowledge that for those Eastern tribes, that Thanksgiving is seen as a national day of mourning. When people say, forget about it, that happened in the past, it wasn't for us. It was just one generation ago that our parents were taken to boarding schools. And we weren't allowed to practice our religion. We weren't allowed to have ceremonies. I still see Thanksgiving as a time of reflection. I see it as a time of acknowledgement. I see it as a time of sharing with family. But don't be afraid to share the true history of what occurred. Don't be afraid to talk about the indigenous peoples of the land that you live on and that we still exist today, that we're still fighting today.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
This week, Steve Zelser, from his Labor Video YouTube channel, brings us to a workweek-sponsored Teamster panel discussion with Teamster International Vice President at Large, John Palmer, as well as labor organizers Mariana Batiste and Barry Anderson, talk about the struggles to defend workers, fight for democracy, membership participation, and control of the union.
My name is Steve Zelser. I'm a labor journalist. I produce Work Week. So we had a rally earlier today against the trade war and the tariffs and the sanctions. On top of that, we have the rise of fascism, attacks on immigrants, ICE. We have to fight death in the labor movement. We have to discuss it. The issue of fascism is not a minor question. Unfortunately, in our unions, the unions have not educated people. The unions are not having a discussion, a debate. What is this fascism? What are we going to do about trade war? Why aren't the union mobilizing? And that is the question we have to ask today. So we have some speakers from the Teamsters Union. The reason this meeting is about the Teamsters Union is the Teamsters Union is a very powerful union, an important union in the United States. It represents workers in transportation, service industry, all kinds of workers. And yet this Teamster leadership, Sean O'Brien, is supporting the tariff and trade war. And what we want to discuss here, what are the issues around trade war, around fascism, and how we're going to defend our unions in this period who are under severe attack. And you see all over the place, unions are under attack. So our first speaker is going to be John Palmer. He's International Vice President at Large of the Teamsters Union.
Welcome. I think it's pretty obvious a trend in this country, sort of violence, the desire by the leadership of this country to control people, to control their wealth. We're watching a complete transfer of wealth from the richest, from the poorest to the richest. It's truly, truly emblematic of what happens when you let capitalism run amok. Now we have a Congress that's abdicated its responsibility. It was given the right to regulate tariffs, as historically as I understand it, were put in place in order to equalize the playing field. If you're going to dump steel in the United States, we're going to add a tariff to your steel so that when it comes in here, we can sell our steel. If your steel's better than ours, then it's going to sell for the same price or maybe a little more on the market. Let the consumer decide. What we've done with these tariffs now is attacked our closest allies. We've weakened the world's economy. We have gone from being seen in the light of a country that leads the world in righteousness. There's a lot to be discussed about whether that's really the case, but at least in our mind, to being really reviled by much of the world. Now our neighbors have lesser standards for labor, and we've, as capitalists, exported our goods to these, or imported goods to these countries and exported our manufacturing to these countries. Those are all issues we should look at and deal with, and the responsibility of Congress. But to allow one man to take actions against other countries that directly impact people that are already struggling. Food in this country is becoming a serious problem for many Americans. And that's what we're faced with now, is people are, you know, dumpster diving for food. That's where we've taken this. So the trade, as a trade unionist, I'm most offended by my general president, Sean O'Brien, and the tact he's taken in supporting Trump and all these tariffs. We're an international union. Our second largest group of Teamsters exist in Canada. The president, Francois Laporte, wrote a very, very staunch letter taking on Trump and his policies, his tariffs. They're not only hurting Canadian Teamsters, they're hurting American Teamsters. When you look at the United Auto Workers and anybody that's been in the northern tier of the United States, where there's a large amount of trade and the automobile industry, that a lot of those parts go back and forth between over the border. It's going to affect the price of cars for everybody. Now we're affecting the economy. People can't work. People are losing their jobs. This is just a catastrophic happening. And for Sean O'Brien to sit idly and say nothing to his vice president or the president of Canada Teamsters is frankly a sin. It's sinful in the labor movement. For Sean O'Brien to sit there and watch 700,000 government workers lose their rights to collective bargaining, it's a sin. And for Sean O'Brien to ignore the entirety of the labor movement and act like the Teamsters, you know, his new T-shirt, Teamsters versus everybody, that's sinful, it's prideful, and all we're doing is weakening our position. We're less than 10% of America's workforce now. We're better than this, and we're the hope for working men and women, regardless if they're in a union or not. And we should be taken care of in the Christian ethic. If one chooses to follow that ethic, we should be taking care of the least of us. As Jesus said, what you've done unto the least of us, you've done unto me. That should be our approach. If we're going to change this country, we're going to change it by leading by example and helping those that have less. And if you truly want to feel blessed in your life, that's what you'll do. And that's our challenge now. Are we going to sit on our hands and play ball with fascists like Donald Trump and Sean O'Brien, who seems to be following the same path? Or are we going to stand up as working men and women, as our predecessors did in the 30s and the 20s, to the Teamsters back in the turn of the century, who fought for their rights and fought for everybody else around them?
And what we see in front of us, it is being destroyed. It's literally being disassembled with the attacks on education workers, on healthcare workers, and others. 3.4 million workers are going to lose their Medicaid. 500,000 healthcare workers are losing their jobs. And this is an emergency situation. And the regents at the University of California, the management of the University of California, are intent on destroying this university. And the people who make the university great in California are the workers. These are the workers that make our university great, and they're under a great attack. And we have with us today Mariana Batista. Batista, she's with IBT. So welcome, Mariana.
Good evening. As a UC worker, 20 years this past September, I have really seen a change and a trend in the treatment of UC workers by our leadership, the regents, and even the executives of the campuses that we all work for. It's a travesty when you are supposed to be taking care of patients. It's a travesty when students are paying high dollar money for education and they're being slighted, fighting for your patients. And you have the head of your labor relations ask you, why do you care so much about patient care? I'm sorry. I work in healthcare, and that's what I'm going to advocate for, is my patients. I'm also a labor activist as well. So I fight for my coworkers. We have people on my campus that are on FMLA who are being fired because they have an ailment from a car accident. And you have the most laxed labor relations I have ever sat across the table from. There's no accountability for their behaviors, and they back management. Management takes their policies and they use them against the workers. They take our own contract and use our contract against the workers. It's horrible. And we have to make a change. And the workers need to come together. We need to unite. All unions need to unite, make a coalition, and let the University of California know that our work matters. Our voice matters. We matter. If it wasn't for us, you couldn't have your positions. We are the ones that keeps this institution running. You're just pushing papers. We're doing the hard work. It's time for us to come together. Stop being afraid. You've got people out there that have the heart like I do to stand up. They're bullies. That's why I got AB 2053 passed, the anti-bullying law that I was told it could never get done. And guess what? I got it passed into law in 3 months. Tell me what I can't do, and I'll show you what I can. And that's what we should be telling the University of California and the California State University. Our work helps keep this institution running. Thank you.
This is an important meeting because we need more meetings like this. We need discussion and debate. One of the problems in the labor movement is business unionism, where unions only want to talk about their own particular contract. And that is destructive because it's not just a contract we're talking about. We're talking about all working people, what's going to happen. If there are raids of ICE in hospitals, that's not just about a contract. That's about human rights of workers. And the right of workers to have respect and have a dignified life and not be facing terrorism. And that's what large numbers of workers in the state are facing. So our next speaker is Barry Anderson.
Greetings, everybody. My name is Barry Anderson. I'm a member of the Teamster Local 856. I'm glad to be here. Excuse me, may not have much words, but I'll say this. Early this year, Donald Trump had a speech. He said, April 2nd, which was earlier this year, he said, April 2nd, this is the day it's called Liberation Day. And he said, we're going to make America wealthier, or wealthy again. How many people in here are feeling that, who are affected by that? None of us. So who's he talking to? All his buddies, the people who are responsible for him being there. So it was not Liberation Day for you or me. None of us. It's for those who control the means of production, that ownership class, those who control the wealth. That's who he was talking to. These tariffs and these trade wars, it is an act of war against the workers. Whether you be union or non-union, it doesn't matter. We're all in the same boat, which is very unfortunate. The labor movement does not start and it does not begin and end with one in particular union organization. And I'm a Teamster. We do not make up the whole labor movement. We may be able to spearhead and get something going, but it consists of union membership and non-unions. That is the labor movement. Unfortunately, we have people in power, our labor leaders. Vladimir Lenin called them the labor aristocracy. I love Vladimir Lenin. That's my man. I call him my uncle. But we see that these individuals, they think it's all about them and whatever they say goes or what have you. And they think that what matters is what they're getting and then, okay, in our membership, they're good, whatever else. It's more than that. This is about survival for all workers. So I'm glad to see everybody come here this evening. I'm glad that we're able to come together, different walks of life. Some of us are union members, some of us are not. This is the labor movement. This is what we come together and we're coming with ideas so we can all have a better way of living, not just for ourselves, but for the younger generation. I have children. Right now, my oldest daughter is currently working now. You know what I'm saying? Got a union job herself. Ecstatic about it. But right now, she doesn't know if she wants to be involved or not, because that situation in her job, it seems like, based on what she's sharing with me, that the union leadership, they're not much of a help. She doesn't even know who they are. But she's paying dues to a bunch of individuals, and she has no idea who they are. And I'm pretty sure I can speak for a lot of people who are experiencing that right now. If you're paying dues to an organization and you don't know who your labor leaders are, or your BA, or your principal officer, or whichever title they have, or whatever they personify to call themselves, that's a problem. If I'm paying you dues, I need to see you. Not once a month. I don't want to see you when it's election time. I don't want to see you once every 7 months. I don't want to see you or I get a phone call. We need you to come out here real quick. The last time I spoke to you was almost 2 years ago. And the only way that we're going to take our power back as workers, we have to do it. The labor aristocracy does not give a damn about none of us. All they care is about filling up their bellies, because they go behind the scenes, make these deals behind closed doors of politicians lobbying at the D.C. It's time for the labor movement to rise, come together, and unite. Set aside the petty racism, set aside the petty stereotypes, and every bourgeois ideology that we set against each other. We have to establish a movement. Yeah, it's good to get things going politically, but this is a lifestyle. This is our livelihood. So with that, I just don't want to get into too much. Let me get to stuttering and sputtering. But I just want to say that and thank you guys.
When it comes to union leadership, you know, in this day and age, it has changed where leaders think that we actually work for them. And that's the problem. It's about them and their self-serving issues or what they want. It's all about them. Let's just put it that way. That's so wrong, so backwards. The union, we're looking at the union right here. This room,
it's the people.
This is the union. The leadership works for us. Don't let your union make you think that you work for them. You have the right to hold your leadership accountable. Stay on top of your leadership, because they will try to shut you down. I was banned from being a steward in my job, in my position, where I've been representing my coworkers for 37 years. 26 and a half of that with UFCW Local 588. In the last 15 years, I've been a Teamster. Very proud Teamster. Proud to be dual. I'm labor all the way. But the leadership that I've endured with my current leader of my local is self-serving. He doesn't care about the members. He only cares about what it is that he wants to do. We have got to hold our union leadership accountable, and our reps need to stand up and start fighting and using our contract when we're violated in the workplace. Not waiting 2 or 3 days to get back when you're when you're in a crisis and you need them right now. That's not what you were hired for. That's not what we're paying your wages for. You are here to represent us.
Again, it's about time to protect the bull by the horns and start organizing within our own unions. That's how we take the power back and put those in power in check. Those who think they have the power. Unfortunately, they've been running with it for so long, it's time to go back and do it the good old-fashioned way. Organize within your union locals and establish a movement within your union locals. Once we start that, it'll be easier for us to organize outside the unions. One thing like the elder, Mr. Palmer, he said we're less than 10% of the populace right now. I remember a couple years ago, remember Barack Obama was running? And he was pushing, the unions got behind him because he guaranteed or he made a promise that he would push the Employee Free Choice Act. Remember that? And what happened when he got in office? Nothing. Now we have another act, it's called the PRO Act. That's more in favor of people coming together and forming unions if they would like to. But that's on hold. Why is that? Because the individual in office, the leader of this administration, I would rather say this regime, the fascist regime, they're pretty much put the NLRB out of commission right now. So now corporations are running rampant. They are breaking labor laws. Mm-hmm. They are violating union contracts. And the workers don't even have a voice. And unfortunately, our labor leaders are sitting down and having dinner with the enemy. Unfortunately, this administration that we have in office, they are not pro-worker. They are anti-worker. And it boils me to the bone. It bothers me to the core when I see, I'm not going to say no names, we know what we're talking about. And we see individuals sitting up here, standing with this president, and individuals who are pretty much getting over on the people, and they're being told, go back to work. It is a disgrace. Forget about the issues. Go back to work. Okay, go back to work. The issues would never get settled if you go back to work. What happens if you go back to work? How are you going to get that raise or change your conditions within the facility or the place in your work environment? How are you going to get those? How are you going to change that? You're not going to because it's back to business. Shut your mouth and get back to work. Be grateful you got a job. Yeah, they don't have to give you a raise. So as a union worker, I'm glad I have something. But what about the rest of the people out there who don't have a union contract? They're being held hostage right now. That's not fair. It's unjust. And I don't want to get too excited, but thank you again.
So one of the issues is that, unfortunately, some organizations, which they say that they're for democracy, are really not for democracy. And the Teamsters have a long history of a group called the Teamsters for Democratic Union. One of the problems of the business union structure of our unions in this country, we don't have democracy. We don't have debates and discussions. The issue of fascism is a critical issue for the lives of people in this country and the world. There's no debate and discussion about the unions on what to do about it. The Democrats are now saying that the military should not violate the Constitution. And the reason they're saying that is because this government, this Trump government, are planning to have a martial law and use the Insurrection Act. This is very serious. And the head of the Painters Union, Jimmy Williams, who spoke last night, along with Sarah Nelson, said, we have to prepare now for the possibility and the likelihood that there's going to be martial law in this country. And they're going to bring in these troops against us. They're already bringing them into cities and terrorizing immigrant communities and citizens. So if that's the situation, what should labor do about it? That's the question. That should be a debate in the labor movement, in my view.
Well, I won't elaborate too long. I was, let's start with the Teamsters for a Democratic Union. I was on their steering committee for many years, a member supported by them in 2 runs for office with the Teamsters, and felt very dismayed when we took office. And the first thing that happened was they fired 13 organizers of color. And there was a lawsuit filed, and they were upset that somehow it was outed that they had to pay $2.8 million in damages to the 13 organizers. This organization decided to clear it up for everybody by posting on their website that these organizers were lazy and didn't work hard. Problem with that is I worked with every one of them. They weren't lazy. They were good organizers. They were organizers of color. And for an organization that espoused equality in the workplace, justice in the workplace, and had democracy in their name, that infuriated me, and I left. I asked to attend the convention. I wanted to speak to the floor. I actually paid to join again and actually paid to go to the convention. They refunded my money and wrote me a very nasty letter. The reason I bring this up, and I don't want to elaborate too long, is I think there's a recurring theme here. You know, as an organizer, you kind of understand that the problem is not, it's always people. Like, the issues are there, the processes are there, but if it only was that simple. And once people get a taste of power, and a little bit, and these people are class traitors.
Money.
You know, like, they're making $300,000 a year. Well, whoop-de-doo. You sold out an entire class of people to make, you know, whatever it is, $200,000 a year more than them. And I think that's the real problem with all this is people, all these years now, 40 years in the Teamsters, I've watched people win locals, you know, with the same mindset that we have and slowly become the thing that we hate. And I think Mariana is right. You have to hold people accountable. There's a reason only 12% of our membership vote in elections now. And, you know, at that point, that's where this leadership wants it. They don't want people educated and involved. And it always comes back to education and involvement. And again, it can't happen top down. It has to happen from the bottom up. We should put our resources into educating our members on the shop floor. And not be afraid, you know, Teamsters for Democratic Union refused to take a resolution from a group that stood outside of this convention along with me as outsiders. We rented rooms and stayed there. They called the police on us. They refused to take a resolution on Palestine. You know why? Because these people freely associated with Marxist, communist, socialist thoughts and theories. For the life of me, I can't understand how they could have gone from an organization that really, like people like me that really got spit on, you know, attacked, physically attacked, to this group that is now in bed, I mean, literally, with the fascists. And how can you call yourself that? I could probably run on that for a while.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. To see more of the complete Teamster panel discussion and for more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel. And now you can find him at the Production of Labor video project on the web at labormedia.net.
Welcome to the working week. Welcome to the working week.
So it's that time of year again. I'm Hal Lohr, your associate producer for Working Voices here at listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And we are in our fun drive. But before we begin, I have to tell you, being here at KPFK can be a humbling experience. I mean, these airwaves have carried the voices of Noam Chomsky, Cesar Chavez, Lena Horne, Nelson Mandela, Betty Davis, Fidel Castro, Dick Gregory, Bettina Aptheker, Joan Baez, and that list just goes on and on and on. And here's a guy like me broadcasting on those same public airwaves that carried their voices, asking you to support the same station that carries that spirit. And facing an uncertain future, independent broadcast media and the otherwise unheard voices it brings you are more important now than ever. So we need your support. Go online at kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735. And if you haven't already, please become a member of our Sustainer Circle and join the KPFK family by donating what you can to this iconic LA radio station. We need you to help us by becoming an activist and spread the word about KPFK. Remind your friends that for the last 65 years, KPFK 90.7 FM Radio Los Angeles has been LA's voice of resistance to America's corporate media echo chamber. Radio voices with a history of resistance to whitewashed propaganda, and with Los Angeles being the epicenter of federal crackdowns on everything from immigration to electric cars, think about how critical free and independent public radio for Southern California just might be. So please, go online at kpfk.org and donate now. A little pocket change to help us keep KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles on the air. And thank you for listening and for your support for this show.
There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
As I travel around the country, I tell people, if you have a job, join a union. And if you don't have a union, start one. You strengthen the middle class by strengthening unions. Unions balance the power of workers with corporations by allowing workers to join forces to get a fair share. Unless workers balance the power of big corporations, with a stroke of a keyboard, executives can now send jobs overseas. Automated technologies threaten to replace workers in every sector of the economy, making jobs less and less secure. Without unions, workers will be completely at the mercy of these trends. We must continue to expand unions to restore balance to our economy. That's why powerful corporations and their enablers in government are trying to squash workers by pushing so-called right-to-work laws and undermining health care, workplace safety, and retirement protection. We have the power to overcome these attacks. Join a union.
KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles would like to invite you to listen next week as American professor, author, lawyer, and political commenter Robert Reich joins us for an interview with Working Voices executive producer Dan McRory. That's Monday morning, December 8th on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles.
In the second half of this morning's show on Working Voices, executive producer Dan McCrory speaks to the executive director of Healthcare Now, Gillian Mason, about the never-ending fight for universal, or at least single-payer, healthcare in America.
This is Dan McCrory for Working Voices talking to Gillian Mason. She's the executive director of Healthcare Now.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Sure. How long have you been doing this?
Well, Healthcare Now has been around since 2004. And I have been involved since 2021. Although actually Healthcare Now was really supportive of me when I was going through an issue with illness. Seeing that support from Healthcare Now and unions and social justice activists actually got me involved in organizing back in 2008.
And how is it going? Can we see some success in this?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Unfortunately, we haven't seen a tremendous amount of policy success, you know, and that's one of the reasons that the idea of healthcare now is deceptively simple. One would think, right, that having healthcare now would be something everyone would want, and yet it's been politicized and made into a third rail to the extent where, you know, we're just not even able to, you know, our politicians are not even able to consider it. So, unfortunately, we have not achieved single payer or Medicare for all or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, we've made some gains. And I think what's most important is that we are building a social movement, right? We really believe that the only way to get this done, we're not going to get this done through backroom negotiations, cigar smoke and politics and lobbyists, right? We really believe that we need to build a social movement. And so that's what we've been doing since 2004. We also, you know, of course, advocate on issues generally of healthcare justice and access. Justice, And so, like, for example, you know, we were instrumental in pressuring Biden to get involved with our whole national coalition of Medicare for All folks, was instrumental in getting Biden to start negotiating with prescription drug companies. Now, unfortunately, that has been rolled back under Trump, but it was a victory at the moment. And of course, and we also ended up, you know, we supported many of the different aspects of the Affordable Care Act as well. You know, we know that it's going to be a minute before we can win Medicare for All, but we're trying to save as many lives as possible in the short term by making sure that we defend the public health care that we do have.
Are there any estimates on how many people are suffering because we don't have that yet?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, oh God, it goes, there are so many ways to quantify that, and all of the numbers are terrible, right? We have some of the lowest life expectancies in the quote unquote developed world. We have larger numbers of folks who are actually uninsured, meaning that they don't have any access to healthcare. Like, for example, with the Medicaid cutbacks, right? Folks are estimating that it could be up to, 50 million people, right, who are going to be suffering because of that. And then the ACA premiums, it's like, honestly, the numbers are too high for me to add up at this point, you know.
Is labor involved in the facet of the organizing you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, National Nurses United, I have to shout them out as, like, leaders in the movement. They're amazing. They have a whole team, you know, dedicated to, to keeping the vision of Medicare for All alive. Individual rank and file nurses are also tremendous leaders throughout the country and all the different grassroots groups that have formed to fight for Medicare for All. And in addition to that, of course, we have many other unions involved. And there's a wonderful organization called the Labor Campaign for Single Payer. And they exclusively work on organizing unions around this issue. So the UE, the Mine Workers of America sit on our executive board at Healthcare Now. Yeah, unions have been really, really critical to this fight.
Is there any plan to do like Canadians did, was starting in one province? I think it was Saskatchewan that was the first.
Saskatchewan. Yep.
Mm-hmm. A plan like that in place?
You know, we support many different approaches toward organizing for Medicare for All, right? And none of us should be so arrogant as to think that we know the answer for how we're going to get there. And I think that probably the likely answer for how we're going to get there is a lot of pressure coming from a lot of different directions. But a significant number of our supporters are working on state-level Medicare for All bills. So, for example, I just left our conference in Florida, and our Florida Medicare for All group has advanced, you know, legislation, have proposed legislation in their state legislature that would cover everyone in Florida and set up a kind of mini Medicare for All system. And of course, the goal of that is always, you know, that eventually we can create enough momentum, demonstrate that it works, and then, you know, go on to win Medicare for All. And there's a wonderful group called One Payer States that amazing work in supporting all of these different state level campaigns as well. Yeah.
In Texas, where you're located now, how are your efforts being perceived?
Well, excuse me. You know, we have supporters all over the country, so we've been, you know, we have maybe the highest concentration of our supporters are definitely, you know, in larger cities on the left and right coasts. But when we talk about Medicare for All in Texas, we get a tremendous response. Texas has one of the highest numbers of uninsured people in the country. And given that the U.S. has one of the highest numbers of uninsured people in the world, that's pretty significant. Texas has, you know, just some of the worst healthcare in the country by almost any metric. And so when I talk to my neighbors about Medicare for All, they immediately get why that is necessary. And I think that, you know, a lot of red state people feel similarly, right, that we need some kind of federal program that's going to help to counteract our terrible, terrible right-wing governors who are really holding people hostage through gerrymandering and voter suppression, right? And so I think that that's why folks in Texas and a lot of red states are really looking to the federal government as a way of eliminating the kind of patchwork that we have in this country today, where you could live in one state and have decent health care and live in another state and just be completely suffering. So I also, you know, Healthcare for All Texas has our local affiliate in Texas, and they've been around for a long time.
Has the ACA or Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, has that failed us?
I guess if you call something a failure, that implies it was designed to succeed. You know what I mean? And the ACA that we got, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it.
You were talking about how Obamacare really wasn't designed to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, right, what did Obamacare force us all to do? It forced us all, right, to get insurance coverage from a private insurer. So it ended up being really like a kind of a dump truck of money dumped at the doors of insurance companies. Now, that being said, we also had some really, really important improvements with the ACA that are, you know, we can't discount them, right? They've already saved millions of lives. So, like, for example, making sure that folks up to the age of 27 had access to their parents' insurance. You know, that's not perfect, but it's something that really, really has helped people, particularly as the economy has been failing so many millennials and Gen Zers. And then, you know, things like making sure that insurance companies could not deny care for pre-existing conditions. That is a fantastic thing, and that's really important. So there are lots of parts of the ACA that were, I think, very problematic, but I can't fault some of the parts of the ACA that really have managed to rescue a lot of people from situations that were terrible. So
I've heard some organizations say now is the time to go for Medicare for All because of the fact that so many people are hurting because they got their insurance taken away or premiums have skyrocketed. So this would be an opportunity for us to slip in something better.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that, you know, one of the things that we saw, particularly in the elections a couple weeks back, is that folks right now are looking, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of Democrats, you know, already, you know, hated Trump. I think a lot of Republicans are actually having some buyer's remorse about Trump. But what we saw more than that in those elections, more than just rejecting the Trump administration, is that voters really responded to people who actually had some positive idea of what we should do instead, right? It's not just about no Trump. It's about let's actually build a system that works. So when we see like the victories of like Zoran Mandami, for example, you know, he's a politician who actually signed the Patients Over Profits pledge, which means that which is a campaign that we work on with National Nurses United, People's Action, and a number of others. And basically that means that he said he would not accept money from the insurance industry. And he, of course, has proposed a number of healthcare solutions that are very much in line with Medicare for All and has declared that he's a Medicare for All supporter. And it's like, I think a lot of people, a lot of Democrats, a lot of corporate Democrats, a lot of just anxious Democrats have it in their heads, right? That right now we have to play it safe. But I think the voting reveals and all the polling reveals that people are ready to hear something positive. They're ready to hear a vision for the future that is actually going to, you know, serve them. And so I think this is exactly the right moment to be talking about Medicare for All, to be pushing people to get out in the streets, tell their stories. And, you know, we're Healthcare Now is, as we always have been, here to support those folks and make sure that their stories get out.
Is there a particular state that's out front sort of leading the charge?
You know, that's a really good question. I think that there are, let's see. I'm going to get in trouble if I forget one, right? we have affiliates in so many Healthcare Now has affiliates in so many states. And we love all of our children equally like parents, right? But that being said, I think that in California and in Minnesota is tremendously active. I would lose my voice if I were to list all the ones that are really like making gains right now.
That must give you a lot of encouragement that there's so many efforts that are moving ahead strongly.
Oh, Martin Luther King reminded us that the arc of history is long, but bends towards justice. I think that, you know, that is absolutely true. Yeah. So as I was saying, I'm tremendously happy seeing what's happening here. I love the fact that people are taking action. And I really do believe that we're going to win this because ultimately it is the only solution for our healthcare problems in this country.
What can regular folks, rank and file, do now?
Oh, wow. There is so much that folks can do right now. I think that's the number one thing, and this is something we believe in really strongly at Healthcare Now. We've really committed a lot of our work to this, is folks need to be telling their stories and telling their stories in all sorts of different places, right? We have found out through both through data and also through anecdotal evidence from all of the different social movements throughout history. People are not persuaded by facts. They are generally not persuaded by politics. What we need to do is to talk to people from a moral perspective, talk to people from an ethical perspective. And that means telling your story. That means talking about the problems with your healthcare. A lot of folks are ashamed right now because in this country, we, you know, present healthcare as something that you have to earn. And a lot of folks who don't have healthcare, they feel like they haven't earned it. And so people can be very ashamed about talking about their healthcare problems. And so we really strongly encourage people to speak up. We encourage people to speak up through our database. In particular, we have the Voices of U.S. Healthcare database, and that is a national database where people share their stories about their issues with healthcare. You can really see the depth of the problem and the scale of the problem. But you also really get the personal aspect. We also encourage people to connect with their local single-payer organization, to connect with their politicians, and make sure that they're telling their story there as well. And then finally, this one's a little bit intangible, but folks need to have conversations with their family, friends, and neighbors. You are so much more likely to be able to persuade someone that you are already in a relationship with that, you know, of any kind of political idea, that really the way people have to begin is with the people closest to them, right? You know, start with the people you can touch, start with the people who are in your immediate family, your neighbors, your colleagues, right? And I think that people really need to be doing that. And I think that sometimes we discount the importance of that everyday conversation.
Is there anything I haven't brought up that you feel is important for our listeners to know?
No, I mean, I'm just like, you know, like I said, we had our conference this weekend, and it was an amazing show of support for Medicare for All. And I really do feel like we have some serious uphill momentum right now. And just really hoping that we can gain the traction we need with American people right now.
Well, thanks, Jillian. Please keep us posted on the fight, because we're behind you 100%.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan. Really appreciate it, and really love your program, and appreciate you highlighting, you know, the role of working people in making change, because working people are really at the head of making change, any change that's ever happened. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory in an interview with executive director of Healthcare Now, Gillian Mason. For more information about Healthcare Now, you can find their website at healthcare-now.org.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Next up, Working Voices highlights our KPFK Working Voices with a staff profile of Dark Star, Dead and Music host Arnella Barbara, who you can hear every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Interview for Dan McCrory with Arnella Barbara. First question. You have the perfect voice for radio. How did you get started? I've always believed that radio chooses you long before you choose it. I really do. My voice has been my instrument since childhood, and after years of performing opera and working in film production and live events, radio felt like a natural evolution. What drew me in was the intimacy of it, the ability to reach people directly soul to soul. They cannot see you, but they can hear you. So your voice, the passion is in that voice. When I first stepped into the studio at KPFK, I felt an instant sense of purpose. And the first time was December 2014. My longtime friend and mentor, brought me to KPFK as a guest, and he is right now our program director. And yes, I'm talking about Mr. G, Gary Baca. That's how it began, and it's only grown more powerful since. Second question. How did the nickname Dark Star Girl come about? Oh, yeah. Dark Star Girl is both a tribute and a transformation. It was born from my lifelong love of the Grateful Dead, especially the cosmic world of Dark Star, which is my favorite song as well. Over time, listeners and friends started calling me the Dark Star Girl, and eventually it became my radio signature and artistic identity, kind of. The name of the show is as well Dark Star, Dead, and Music. Third question. You seem to pop up everywhere on the KPFK grid. How do you juggle so many responsibilities? Ah, that's funny. I thrive in motion. Creativity is my oxygen, honestly, and KPFK is the perfect environment for someone who lives for the craft. I host, produce, and DJ, support other shows, curate music, and jump in whenever needed. I manage it through discipline, passion, and a deep love for the station. When you love something this much, it doesn't feel like juggling. It feels like service. Speaking of shows that I produce, please listen to the show Tuesdays, Global Village, 11 to 1 with Gary Baca, Mighty Gary Baca. Listen to the show Pocho Hour of Power, also produced by Gary Baca, every Friday, 3 to 4 p.m. And my very beautiful, I'm very proud of that show, The Signal, every Saturday, 12 to 1 p.m. with magnificent Dino, Armando Dino Guidino. And of course, every Sunday night, 8 to 10 p.m., Dark Star, Dead and Music, with your host, Arnella Barbara, the Dark Star Girl. Question number 4. You hold a master's degree in opera from the Milan Conservatorio. How does that background mesh with KPFK or the Grateful Dead? And what programming would you like to see on the station? Well, opera gave me the foundation for everything. Breath control, emotional expression, musical intuition, and the ability to hold an audience through pure sound. That training blends beautifully with KPFK's mission, and surprisingly, as a matter of fact, it meshes perfectly with the Grateful Dead. Grateful Dead are operatic in their own way, if you think about it. Grand, emotional, improvisational, and spiritual. I would also love to see more programming centered on animal rights, human rights, and vegan living topics that promote compassion, ethics, and sustainability. Along with that, more genre-bending music shows, more international soundscapes, and more live music features would enrich the grid. KPFK is a canvas with infinite possibilities, and there is so much more we can create. And before we finish, I would like to say thank you so very much for having me on your show. Dan, it's lovely to see you as well. I would like to also, as always, thank our magnificent, our beautiful general manager, Maggie LaPeak. She is the steady hand that holds all of this together. A working class hero with something to be
in. Once again, I'm Hal Lohr, your associate producer for Working Voices, and because it's fun drive time, before we go back to this morning's Working Voices show on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, I'm going to remind you that without programs like KPFK's Working Voices, the only media narrative you hear are what America's corporate owners want you to hear, so the only choices you'll get are the ones those owners will allow you to have. And America's corporate owners are confident that they are in control. And part of that agenda is openly talking about silencing dissenting media voices. But here at KPFK, you can have those working voices heard. So please, pick up your phone and call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, or better yet, go online at kpfk.org and donate to this one-of-a-kind LA station. Even better, talk to your friends about KPFK and the importance of listener-supported non-corporate radio, because you can become a member of our sustainer circle by donating $25, $50, or $100 and join the KPFK family. But we also want you to take that one step further if you can. Simply put, KPFK's Working Voices has stood strong in solidarity with working people and the unions that represent them, and now we're asking if those unions, associations, and organizations can find a way to stand in solidarity with the hardworking people that bring you this program. So once again, you can contact KPFK at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, and they'll be happy to direct you on helping us keep listener-supported KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and this Working Voices program on the air. Because really, with everything that's going on in Southern California that America's corporately owned media chooses to ignore or turn into federal propaganda, who else other than KPFK would even consider allowing a program like Working Voices to walk that broadcast picket line in solidarity for working people on the radio? Please go to kpfk.org and do what you can to keep these listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles airwaves independent and free. Because seriously, look at the state of America's corporately owned and or what remains of the federally subsidized media, and think of the alternatives.
And that's our show for this week. We're asking our labor partners, local and regional officers, to consider underwriting the show. Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. Please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We want to hear from you. Email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. This is Enrique Sanchez, Founder Director of Spanish United. Our thanks to Steve Zelser, Gary Scott, Hal Lohr, and all our guests. And join us next week as American professor, author, lawyer, and political commentator Robert Reich joins us for an interview with our executive producer, Dan McCrory. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. We're in this together. Remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a good rest of your day, everyone. Take care.
So much work, yeah, yeah. Work, work, yeah. Work, work. When the truth is found to be.
When the headlines are full of spin and the truth is hard to find, where do you turn? You turn to KPFK, because when our backs are against the wall, KPFK stands for the truth in media, not the BS. This Giving Tuesday, December 2nd, we're launching our fund drive with a goal, 500 new and sustaining members before the end of the year.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
We need you to join us. Become a sustainer for just $5 or $10 a month, whatever you can afford, and you ensure that the truth always has a voice here in Southern California. Stand with the truth. Become a member or renew your membership today by calling 818-985-5735, option 2, or pledge securely online at kpfk.org/donate.
Support comes from CAP UCLA.
presenting Third Coast Percussion and Solar Nader on December 6th at 8 p.m. at the Nimoy. Third Coast Percussion pays tribute to the late Zakir Hussain with Murmurs in Time, his final commissioned work. The program also includes solo tabla and new works by Jesse Montgomery, Tigran Hamasyan, and Jay Lynn, honoring Hussein's enduring legacy at CAP UCLA. More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
The Bradcast.
Experts have said that the case has little chance of success at the Supreme Court, much like the numerous other